Really talking about logic, in some syntactic sense, some proof system or whatever, but just talking about ways of representing which outcomes can occur together in an experiment. And of course, these things that we're using, like these positive operators, are pretty far abstractions, actually, from actual experimental outcomes. I mean, there are many, many different things that can happen in the lab that you may want to represent by, you know, a particular Hilbert space operator. So we've abstracted somewhat from a lot of details of how these things are measured and just taken the idea that there are a lot of different ways to measure a particular thing. I would also like to relate this to a probabilistic approach, which is one of my favorite ways of looking at empirical theories. And so the probabilistic approach, I think, you find in the so-called convex operational approach to theories. You find it in the work of Lucian Hardy also, for example, although he hasn't particularly built on previous formalism. But in a lot of ways, he's using the same sorts of things. So you have a convex set of states, and you have a set of observables and a set of yes-no observables, where you just get one of two values that are often called effects. And so you might think those might be related to these algebraic structures called effect algebras. And I'll say a little bit. I'll try to say a little bit about how that works, although probably not as much as I'd like to, because I want to make sure that the basics of just effect algebras themselves are clear as background for some of the talks that are going to happen later. So here's the definition. An effect algebra is a set E with a partial binary operation written as circle plus, so it's not defined everywhere. And it's got a distinguished element, which I'm writing as big one. That's supposed to represent sort of the trivial proposition that's always true, you might think, the outcome that will always occur. We did the experiment, the system's there, something like that. And then we're going to use the notation, just purely notation, A perp B, to mean that A plus B exists. Might be considered a bad choice of notation. Shouldn't really be interpreted as orthogonality, but it's the common one in the literature. And what properties does this satisfy? Well, a strong notion of commutativity, right? And so we want to think of this notion of A plus B, by the way, as sort of, if you like, saying that, well, A and B could be measured together in one experiment, and A plus B is kind of like coarse graining over A and B and just saying one of those things happened. So strong commutativity is quite natural on this sort of intuitive interpretation I just gave. It says, well, if A plus B exists, B circle plus A had better exist too. And since being able to have things be the outcome of the same experiment is not a particularly order-dependent notion, it's quite reasonable. Okay, a stronger statement, however, is strong associativity. I'll say a little bit about why this actually might not justified later, but it is, if B plus C exists, and A plus B plus C exists, well, then so does A plus B also exist, and they associate. So you can forget about parentheses in these things. Third assumption is orthosupplementation. So for any one of these sort of abstract outcomes, there's a unique, right? That exclamation point after exists means there is exactly one. There's a unique B, such that A plus B is one. So that's like you looked in some experiment where this thing could be an outcome, and you kind of coarse-grained all the other abstract outcomes that could occur with it, lumped them together, and coarse-graining all of those, you just get the entire experiment. Okay, and we call, we use a little prime on A to indicate its orthosupplement, as we call this unique element. And we define zero to be the orthosupplement of one. And then we have one more axiom, and that just says, if A plus 1 exists, then A is 0. I should mention that, well, yeah, that's enough. Okay, you can also define a sub-effect algebra. So you say something is a sub-effect, F is a sub-effect algebra of E. If the subset of E, it contains this 1, this universal element, and it's closed under orthosupplementation, and if it's also closed under this circle plus operation. And so it is an effect algebra in its own right. So that's the notion of sub-effect algebra. So let me just give you an obvious example. And that's POVM elements. So Alex is right off his chalk. Plus is just addition, okay? The E is just the interval between 0 and the identity. So it's just the set of x such that 0 is less than or equal to x is less than or equal to the identity. X in the set of Hermitian operators on some Hilbert space, and I'm going to let my Hilbert spaces always be finite dimensional because I'm coming from quantum information and because I don't like to think about topology. Well, I do like to think about topology, but I don't like to do it in public. So. All right, so that is a clear example. Here's 0, here's 1, and it's one of the main motivating examples, obviously, for cooking up this definition. But a whole host of interesting structures that are neither quantum nor classical. There are, of course, classical examples, quantum examples, but a whole host of more general such structures exist. And so it's a pretty good framework for studying operational theories where you can do a bunch of different measurements, and there's various probabilities for various outcomes. And you want to have some formal apparatus for handling them, for formulating axioms, for asking what kinds of constructions can I do to combine systems, what kind of information dynamics are reasonable, what kind of how can I use these systems for information processing. Okay, fuzzy sets are actually fuzzy sets over, let's say, a finite number of alternatives are another example. And fortunately for us quantum information people, they're isomorphic to the sub-effect algebra of this that consists of projectors that are all, positive operators that are all diagonalizable in a fixed particular basis. That wasn't clear? Okay. Yeah. So much the worse for the mic, but okay. Yeah. So was that remark about fuzzy sets actually pretty clear? Because I mean, right? Fuzzy sets are sets where the membership relation, instead of being like having a characteristic function, it's one if the thing's in the set, it's zero if it's out of the set. We let it be in the set with a value, let's say, between 0 and 1. And so those sort of fuzzy membership amounts between 0 and 1 are just the eigenvalues. Just think of them as the eigenvalues of your positive operator between 0 and the identity. And since they are all diagonal on the same basis, effectively, that's just functions on a set. Okay. So just to motivate these a little bit empirically, I'm going to Where did this? Okay, let's think a little bit about where you might get such a structure from now from a probabilistic point of view. So I'll introduce another notion called test spaces. Alex may mention it later if he gets to it. Let's just say a test space is a set X and a set, I don't know, T of tests. And T are just subsets of X. Okay, and now X is supposed to represent, again, experimental outcomes. These subsets of X are supposed to represent sets of outcomes so that you could do some procedure or some test that has all of the outcomes in one of these things as possible outcomes. And then there's a whole list of all the sets of things from X that could occur together as outcomes of a complete test. And so since we want these tests to be complete, we may add a few weak requirements, like no one of these tests should be a subset of another, a proper subset. And we want everything in here to occur in one of these things, at least. Irrelevant outcomes around. Okay, so roughly speaking, those are test spaces. A state on a test space is a function omega from X, the set of outcomes, to the unit interval in the reals. And it's to be interpreted as just giving the probability of each outcome. Notice that means that probabilities are defined. I mean, if states are interpreted as giving us probabilities, then we've already assumed non-contextuality, right? So these things can actually overlap, right? Some outcomes can occur in more than one test, but if they do, a state assigns them the same probability. Okay. We need one more requirement for something to actually be a state, and that is for any test in the set of legal tests, the sum over all outcomes in that test of the probability, if you like, of the outcome should be 1. Okay, so that's the definition of a state. So you might actually attempt to get an effect algebra. So this is an extremely operational notion. Perhaps the only thing that's not potentially not operational about it is the fact that these things can intersect, right? Because what does it mean for an outcome of one procedure to be identified with the outcome of another? Now, maybe we have some, we might have reasons for wanting to do that. But on the other hand, there are different procedures going on. Why a priori should we assume that any two of these things could coincide? Nevertheless, this framework allows you to do that if you want. Let's imagine that we have a test space that where these tests are all disjoint. So we just, by fiat, if we do a different experiment, we just distinguish the outcomes, at least by the fact that it occurred in a different experiment. So they're all disjoint. And let's say we have some bunch of states on here. So let's call it, delta. It's a set of states on our test space, which maybe I'll call X. It would probably be better to call it T, because T basically has all the information about the test space. Now suppose we we want to see how could we interpret an effect algebra in terms of an operational structure like this. So this is the sort of thing you might get after doing a lot of experiments, coming up you know, through Bayesian inference or whatever, with a pretty stable set of probabilities for, you know, what the outcomes of these experiments are going to be. So, you know, you've obviously done some kind of theory to identify, you know, okay, you can perform the test more than once, you know, and if you do it while, you know, you've got Jimi Hendrix on the radio versus doing it with Chopin, it won't make any difference, right, unless it's really sensitive to vibration, and so forth. But so let's imagine all that stuff is sort of done, and you've got some reasonable theory, like quantum mechanics, where you've pretty good idea what the probabilities are. Can you cook up an effect algebra? So the answer is pretty close. You might say, well, so the first thing you might do is introduce what we might call a sort of event logic on this. And so I think, I don't know quite what people call it. They may call it the logic or the empirical logic of a test space. But the idea is to define all the events. Okay, so subsets, a subset of a test is an event. And now we look at the set of all subsets of tests. So they're like subtests, right? Sets of things that could occur together in an experiment, but their probabilities no longer have to add up to one. But if we think about coarse graining outcomes, then we could certainly get all of these things as sort of coarse grained outcomes. So we do that, and we notice that each of these tests then has a classical logic, right? Boolean lattice with and an OR. On this set of subsets of this test. And so the whole collection of these things has a relation that's just the union of all these relations. And we can find something pretty close to an effect algebra by doing the following. We identify two outcomes if they have the same probability in all states. So what I'm talking about, although it's sort of my way of looking at this, and I've written it up in a couple of papers, it's pretty close to something that people have been doing for a long time, I think starting with Mackey, probably including Ludwig. And I think Stan Gutter, who's right here, has some papers maybe on what he calls effect state systems, where perhaps similar things are done. Ludwig's a famous case where actually you start with an undefined notion of outcome and of preparation, and then you identify preparations that have the same probability for all effects. That means, or for all outcomes, sorry, and that means they behave like states on a test space once you've made that identification. And then you can identify the set, you can identify sets of outcomes that have the same probability in all states. So if we do that latter thing, well, how does it work? So we define this equivalence relation, right? A and B, which are elements of this X, are equivalent if and only if, it's the definition, right? For any omega in our set of states. So this equivalence relation, of course, depends on set of states delta. It could be that you might figure out some more experiments to do, and some of them would actually distinguish things that you formerly thought were equivalent. But fine. So then you'd come up with perhaps a different effect algebra. Okay. So for any state, omega of A equals omega of B, that's the equivalence relation. Then what might you do? Take the equivalence classes of this relation. You've identified things that are related like this. It is an equivalence relation. Take the equivalence classes to be the basic elements that you're going to are going to belong to your effect algebra. Right. So those are sort of the abstract measurement outcomes. where you threw away the details, and in this case, all you care about is the probabilities. So on these abstract elements, let's let E1 O plus E2 be defined as A, and I'll explain what these things mean, or let's use T. A or orient T B. For some A such that E1 is E of A. So what do I mean by E of A? Well, the basic objects are equivalence classes now. E is the map that maps any one of these outcomes to its equivalence class. Okay, B such that E2 is E of B, and M such that A, B are in M. And A intersect, okay, so this is a good point. B equals zero. Actually equals the empty set. Okay, so I think I said A and B were outcomes, right? That's not quite right. I want A and B to be events, right? So I don't want this thing just defined, this map to just have X as its domain, but actually to have all possible events, all coarse gratings of outcomes. They're all given probabilities. And so an event A is equivalent to event B if their probabilities are the same. And the probability you get from these states in an obvious way, right? If it's a subset, you just add up the probabilities. Okay, so we define this thing that we would like to be the effect algebra sum. And I need E here too. So if these are disjoint sets only, then I look at their equivalence class. And you can prove that it doesn't matter, right, which representatives you take here. So E is an equivalence class. E1, E2 is also an equivalence class of events. And for anything that's going to map to anything that's going to map to E1 and anything that's going to map to E2, I take, if those things are disjoint, I just take the union of the sets. I coarse grain them, and that's my definition. The equivalence class of this thing is my definition here. And you can prove that it doesn't matter which representatives you take here, you always get the same thing. Okay, you almost get an effect algebra. The one thing you don't get is this strong associativity. And the example for why you might not get that, it's very simple. Let's just take two tests, M and N. And I'm going to write them kind of this way. Here's M. It's got A and B in it. And it's got, let's say, F. This is the set of outcomes. I'm partitioning them for a particular reason with parentheses. Here we've got C, and let's say C, and let's say D and G here. And let's say in all the states on this thing, perfectly good test space, in all the states on this thing, it happens that the probability of the set DG here and the subset F here are the same, and the same for C and A, B. So A plus B is going to exist. A plus B is going to exist. And actually, it's going to be equal to C, right? Because C has the same probability as A and B, as the subset AB. Okay, so C is equal to those things. Similarly, C occurs in a test with D. So that means, and I guess rather than A plus B, right, I should really say the images of them under these equivalence mappings. C is going to exist. C plus D is going to exist. So we're all set up to have the strong associative law tell us that, well, B plus D should also exist. But because B and D never occur in any two tests, this construction won't define it. Nevertheless, you can kind of throw it in. And with the caveat that if you do throw it in, right, you haven't got a way of actually measuring it. So it's a pretty abstract thing to do that. So that's perhaps the one caveat I'd have about the notion of effect algebra as a reasonable way of formalizing these empirical theories. And it's certainly worth asking, well, if we do end up in a situation, if we ever did end up in a situation where, you know, our phenomenological theories just didn't satisfy strong associativity, would that allow you to do any weird stuff with information processing? What, you know, what use would it be, or what problem would it be? Okay. Mathematically, however, it's not too terribly hard to just extend things and make a strong associativity like fiat. So let's suppose we've done that. Let me just point out one minor thing, which is this notion of test space you can extend to a notion called e-test space or effect test space. Only difference between that and a regular test space is that you can let, it's a set of multisets instead of sets. So multisets have an integer valued membership sort of strength, which means you can have two copies of an outcome in a test. And it's actually sort of natural for quantum mechanics because, I mean, you can have a resolution of identity into positive operators, and a given positive operator can occur several times. So it's just, if you run into that, it's sort of a minor generalization of test spaces to allow that possibility. So let's do some elementary results about effect algebras. This says more elementary results about effect algebras. All right, well. So you can introduce a natural partial order on an effect algebra. And it's a pretty simple one. You say A is less than or equal to B just means that there exists a C such that A plus C equals B. You can also throw in an additional axiom and get something called an orthoalgebra. Okay, so this is the definition. An orthoalgebra is an effect algebra that satisfies A plus A prime exists. Sorry. Scratch the prime. A plus A exists implies A is equal to 0. So projection operators on the Hilbert space satisfy this. POVM elements don't. So this is a pretty strong requirement that forces some sort of sharpness on the elements of an effect algebra. So it's the projection operators do form an effect algebra under addition with the identity as the unit, and 0 is the 0. but they also satisfy the central property. Okay, so now some elementary results. And we'll use these results to talk a little bit about a formal notion of sharp elements, or a couple of formal notions of sharpness in an effect algebra. So it's pretty clear that elements of an effect algebra can be sort of fuzzy in the sense that you get POVMs, not projectors. You can have fuzzy sets as well as crisp sets. Okay, elementary facts. So if P plus Q exists, then the ortho supplement, I hope I have not been calling this the ortho complement, it's typically called ortho supplement. Ortho supplement of P is under the ortho supplement of Q. So the proof is pretty simple. Okay, P plus Q exists. By the ortho supplementation law, so does P plus Q's ortho supplement, right? So in a Hilbert space lattice, Hilbert space effect algebra, what's the ortho supplement of X? It's the identity minus X, right? That's the thing to keep in mind to have some idea of what we talked about. Okay, so that exists. That's the identity. Okay. You can also write this as Q plus Q prime. And now I was going to characterize effect algebras in another way that is pretty much trivially equivalent, but I'm not going to have time to do it. So if you want to use this strong associativity, strong commutativity, you can then add three other nice axioms that characterize an effect algebra. And I do have a sheet that has them on it. So. Faster to just write them down, I think. Somebody here tell me if this isn't right. Okay, so in addition to those first two axioms, strong commutativity, strong associativity, if you throw in positivity, which says A plus B equals 0, implies that A and B are both equal to 0. If you throw in cancellativity, which says that A plus B equals A plus C, implies B equals C. If you define a unit as something that behaves like the identity, namely the only thing you can add to it is 0, okay, and then of course 0 is the element or the only thing where when you add it to anything, you get the thing back. You can prove zeros are unique just from those first two axioms. Okay, so you define a unit that way, and then you say the thing is unital, so it has a unit. Okay, so we said, what did we say a unit was? Something such that, right, x plus the unit exists, bad notation here, implies x is 0. So it's a top thing in the partial order. So this combination of things, you can show that there has to exist an ortho complement, and it's another way of characterizing an effect algebra. Okay, so the import is that effect algebras satisfy cancellativity. So we can cancel out Q here. We get P plus Q ortho supplement equals Q ortho supplement. And therefore, P is less than Q prime. What just happened there? No, it happened here. Yeah. P is less than Q prime because here's the thing you can add to P to get Q prime. nice to have all this chalk. So, okay, another nice little property is what you might call contraposition, and that is P less than or equal to Q prime is equivalent to Q prime less than or equal to P prime. Okay, obviously you only have to prove one direction of this because it's symmetric. The statement is symmetric under interchange of P and Q. Where's the eraser? It's another easy proof, but I kind of want to do it because it lets you, you can use these propositions to prove a little something about definitions of sharpness. Okay, so let's start with this. What does it mean? It means there's some R such that P plus R equals Q. Fine. So that means that P plus R plus Q prime is 1. And by strong associativity, then, Q prime plus P exists. And since Q prime plus P exists, we then have, using this thing, that Q prime is less than or equal to P prime. Okay. And we'll use that contraposition a little bit later in proving the relationship between two notions of sharp element. P under Q prime implies, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I'm beginning to. Prime drawing. And I think that's what we showed, wasn't it? Good. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about so-called morphisms for effect algebra, right? So these are just structure-preserving maps. So let's say we have, I don't know, E1 with its plus relation and its 1. And we have E2, et cetera. Okay, so what does it mean for a function f from E1 to E2 to be a morphism? Well, does everybody read that? All right, let's save some writing. It means that the unit in one is taken to the unit of the other. And it means that when P plus Q exists, F of P plus F of Q Sorry, what? Right. So, I even have a pen. What is this? Okay, good. And then, okay, so that's a morphism. I've seen some different terminology for what is faithful. I guess you can have a morphism that doesn't satisfy f of the unit equals the unit in some definitions. And then some people require that f of the unit equals the unit for faithfulness, but another word that's often used for faithfulness is what's more commonly called a monomorphism. So that's that whenever, right, the sum of two elements in the image exists, the sum of their pre-images also exists in the original thing. And then an isomorphism is a monomorphism that's actually onto the set. So it's not into it, into some sub-effect algebra of the target, but it's onto the whole thing. And an automorphism is an isomorphism from the thing to itself. And that, you know, preserves effect algebra structure and also doesn't throw any structure away. So it's not just that it respects effect algebra-ness, but it also preserves all the structure. So these morphisms of an effect algebra into itself are kind of a good candidate for dynamics on one of these things. Sort of a Heisenberg-like representation of dynamics, where you're asking what happens to the operators that represent, or the things that represent measurement. And then the automorphisms are probably a pretty good candidate for reversible dynamics. Okay, what are states on these effect algebras? Remember, I said what states were on these test spaces. I didn't actually say what they were on effect algebras. But that little construction I gave, you will actually induce a set of states on the effect algebra, or even on the weak effect algebra that doesn't have that strong associativity axiom. It will have the weak associativity axiom that says the associativity law holds whenever everything referenced in it is defined. So I didn't actually formally define what states on effect algebra are. One way to think about it is you can view the unit interval in the reals as an effect algebra with just addition restricted to that interval, and 0 and 1 are what you think they are. And then it's a morphism from an effect algebra to that. Well, it just says, in other words, that the probability of x O plus y is the probability of x plus the probability of y, probability of 0, 0. Probability of this 1 is 1, as you might expect. And of course, probabilities are positive. So those are states. Let's say a little bit more about properties of sets of states on effect algebras, because there are some sort of interesting ones. Let's call omega of E the set of all states on effect algebra. All states that satisfy those requirements. And let's let delta be some other set, subset of it perhaps, proper subset, or just the whole thing. So we say a set of states is separating if it satisfies that for any two distinct effects, there's at least one state that has different probabilities on it. So when I did this construction earlier, we're guaranteed the states we get are going to be separating because that's how we constructed it. Said, you know, we identify anything if it's indiscernible from some other thing we identify those two. If it's probabilistically, you can't tell the difference. Okay, it's order determining, and this is actually stronger than separating. If you can recover the effect algebra order from a set of states. So we say, if for all states, right, Q has higher probability than P, then Q is higher in the ordering than P. Okay, it's positive, that's a very weak condition. Any non-zero state can have positive probability. Any non-zero effect can have positive probability in some state. That's obviously much weaker than separating. It says at least the states separate everything from zero, everything that isn't zero from zero. Strongly order determining is the strongest of these things. It's even stronger than order determining. And what does it say? It says that A is less than or equal to B if and only if, for any state, do I have the parentheses? I mean the quantification scope right here. I think that's right. For any state, if the state assigns probability 1 to A, it must assign probability 1 to B. So there are some examples one can give of properties of, well, of state sets that separate these different notions. And I think you might argue, okay, if you like this construction by probabilistic equivalence, for example, you might argue that, well, separating is the weakest thing I should accept for a reasonable physical theory. And then you might want to think about, well, what are the operational implications of order determining? Is that something you really want to require? Probably not. But at least it has a clear probabilistic relation. And it does actually single out interesting classes of effect algebras. Here's a counterexample to, here's one that at least separates order determining and separating. So some of you may recognize this thing. It's the so-called Fano plane. And so the way I've drawn it, I should explain these diagrams a bit, which I believe are called Ricci diagrams. So the way this thing works is I draw a smooth curve. So I have a bunch of atoms in this effect algebra that, if you look in the partial order, they're right above zero. I didn't bother to put in zero. And then the things above the atoms are thought of in the following way. We take any sort of complete set, any resolution of unity, so any set such that, you know, plus for A in S is the identity, and we represent it by putting those things on the same smooth curve, right? So no kinky curves, but this circle counts, and these lines count. And those are sort of the abstract tests, if you like, that you can do of effects, the measurements you could make. And so other elements of the algebra then just correspond to subsets that are all within the same, contain elements on the same closed curve. Turns out that this effect algebra has only one state where all the elements have probability 1/3. So it's clearly, it's not that that separates separating and order determining. It's an example of an effect algebra that doesn't have actually either a separating or an order determining set of states. So typically, you know, when there's some pathology like that, you can cook up a little finite example that illustrates it. So for example, order determining but not strongly order determining, there's another example like this, which kind of cute, but probably not worth going through in detail because it's a fair amount larger. Okay, I think I have time, although my watch may not be quite right, but to just give a few definitions of sharpness, and I think I'll end with that. Either of these definitions are equivalent for Hilbert space effect algebras, and they single out the projectors. So here's one. P is principal is defined by saying, well, if Q and R are less than or equal to P, So you can measure them together, and you can coarse grain them to get P, and perhaps with some other stuff. That was actually wrong. You can measure each one of them along with something else, and coarse grain it with that something else to get P. And furthermore, you can have them both occur in the same measurement, and you can coarse grain them to get something, of course. Now, if it's always the case that you can actually measure them together, and they're below P, the sum of those two things are below P, so you coarse grain them, and that's still a sub-measurement of P, then we say P is sharp. Say P is principal. Another possible candidate definition of sharpness is characteristic. So P is characteristic if anything that's under both P and its orthosupplement is zero. Right? So think about projectors. Well, anything that is less than or equal to P and less than or equal to the identity minus P, it's zero. So one can show that principle implies characteristic, and although I did some preliminary work towards showing that, So let's suppose P is not characteristic. Well, that means there's a Q that's under both P and its orthosupplement, and it's not zero. That Q is not zero. So P is less than or equal to Q prime by contraposition. And also P prime is less than or equal to Q prime by contraposition. Well, P plus P prime exists because it's one. Okay, but then principalness is going to require that P plus P prime is less than or equal to Q prime. But that says one is less than or equal to Q prime, so Q is zero. And therefore, it can't be principal. So non-characteristic implies non-principal. Principal implies characteristic. In the Hilbert space effect algebra, however, those notions are equivalent, and they're equivalent to being a projector. And I think I won't go on to prove that. It's quite simple, actually. Let me just say one more weird thing that happens with this notion of sharpness. You can take an effect algebra morphism that embeds an effect algebra into another effect algebra in such a way that the only sharp elements of the target algebra, this is due to Gutter and Greci, I believe, the only target elements of the sharp, of the only elements of the target effect algebra that are sharp, I believe according to the characteristic definition, I'm not certain, are 0 and 1. So that means that sharpness is sort of contextual. It's not preserved under embedding as a sub-effect algebra. So it might be a little more slippery notion than you might hope, at least with these definitions. So I think I'll stop for now and continue next week. We'll talk about representation theorems, and I'll try to get the relationship of the, sorry, not next week, tomorrow. Wishful thinking. So getting these things related to ordered linear spaces and the convex sets formulation of observables and states for empirical theories. Thanks. Sorry, I'm making you do so much work, but I mean, it's coming out great. So. I should take this thing off. Oh. finish this thing up.